Hi, welcome to More Than a Song. Our show's focus is on West Texas music singers and songwriters, offstage and on the air. Today, we'll be talking with my good friend, Junior Vasquez. Welcome to More Than a Song.
Thanks for inviting me. It's good to see you again.
Tell us about growing up here in West Texas.
Well, I was born at a very young age, and I remember coming out of my mother's womb and singing La Bamba. That was it, man. I was destined for bombiness. No. The address on my birth certificate is Route 1 Lorenzo. My dad was a farmhand, so we lived out in the country. I was the ninth child that they had, and it was at Loft Clinic. It was here on 19th Street somewhere in 1956. Really, we're in the Idaloo School District, so I started school there in Idaloo, my first and part of my second grade. As it is with most farmhands, they move around a lot. We would just go from one place to another, and we stayed there for a couple of years in Idaloo, and then my dad found a job in Petersburg. And I stayed there till my fifth grade.
When did you first pick up the guitar or become interested in music?
It was right around the fifth grade. I was about 10 years old, the first time that I picked up a guitar. And I can't remember specifically saying, man, I remember the day when I saw the guitar and it spoke to me and I picked it up and the rest is history. And it was just a natural flow. There was just music around the house all the time being played. I had an older brother that played guitar and another older brother that played drums. And at that point, they had started fiddling with instruments a little bit. I had an uncle that would come out there, and he was also a guitar player. If I remember correctly, I think I learned to play on his guitar. He had a big old gigantic acoustic guitar. And can I recall exactly what song I learned first or anything of that nature? I didn't take any lessons, obviously, no way that my parents could afford anything of that nature. But heck, I didn't even have a guitar. I just played on my brother's guitar or my uncle's guitar. I didn't actually own a guitar till I was 14 years old. From there, we moved to Roosevelt and finished my fifth and sixth grade. And I started playing more guitar there because my brother had bought a real nice electric and I was able to play on his guitar and he didn't let me borrow it. Started my first band in the sixth grade there at Roosevelt. Then I thought, man, this is pretty cool. We were called the Young Rebels. We learned about four or five songs. I taught the drummer the drum parts and I taught the bass player what to play on bass. And I think we did like Louie Louie and those kind of things, you know, nothing real hard, but we had a school assembly in the sixth grade. That kind of stirred something in me thinking, this is kind of cool.
And you knew from the moment that you started playing with this band that that's something you could do. You like to sing, you like to write, you like to play. You could hear all the different instruments and what they should play.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, huh? I don't know how that came to be. I guess maybe just watching my brothers and just understanding each instrument. I remember being 4 or 5 years old and pretending, my two older brothers as well. And one of them would pretend to be playing a guitar, get a broom, and the other would get pots and pans, a drummer. And then I would pretend at that point to play the accordion. Because we would listen to conjunto music back in the day, in the 60s, and I wanted to be an accordionist. And listening to music, even second, third, fourth, and fifth grade, in hoeing cotton, somehow or another, one of my brothers or sisters afforded a transistor radio, and we would kind of pass it around when we were about to hoeing cotton, and I'd be listening, you know, to all those 60s kind of songs that all of those had a lot of influence on me. I couldn't afford to buy any records. The only way that I was able to listen to music was on radio. From Roosevelt, we moved to Abernathy. And from Abernathy, I finished most of my eighth. And then I went to Matthews Junior High School. That's where I met Paul and Jay Taniyuki. Jay was the first guy that I actually started playing with, doing two acoustic guitars. And we did an assembly there as well. We did some Cat Stevens, some Jim Croce, Beatles. And that's when I really started really digging into that aspect of playing music live, figuring out songs and harmonies. And I was raised listening to harmonies because there was an innate thing in our family. Somebody would say, you sing primera, primera, segunda, tercera. Primera means you sing in the melody, and the segunda means the second part, tercera means the third part. So I was already used to harmony. So whenever I'd hear the Beatles or Crosby, Stills, and Nash and hear the harmonies, I understood it. The Taniyuki brothers, the same way. We started playing together, and the summer before my sophomore year, Paul and Jay and I had our first band, Instant Tea. We call it Band Instant Tea. There's a picture floating around of us playing at South Plains Fair. There was a stage there. That's one of the earliest pictures that I have of us three performing. And then after that, well, of course, we went into Lubbock High School. I think it was towards the end of my sophomore year, we met a guy named Carol Welch. And that's when we started the original Peyote. And I hadn't met Mickey yet because I met her my junior year in high school. We were both in choir and she was the accompanist. And she had this long, beautiful blonde hair and these beautiful blue eyes. And I thought, she's not only beautiful and pretty, but she also plays the piano. You know, maybe we can make some music together.
The Peyote Band became one of the most well-known and well-liked bands of the 70s in Lubbock.
When I started playing with Paul and Jay, they were a little bit more advanced than I was, especially Paul. He knew finger picking, and so I learned some things from Paul. I also learned quite a bit from Carol Welch on the style of finger picking that I do now. Those were my guitar lessons. Carol would listen to America or Crosby, Stills & Nash or whatever songs we were learning. He would learn all the parts, and then he would teach me and Jay, okay, this is your part. So I give a lot of kudos and credit to Carol and Paul Taniyuki, seeing that I had a little potential and good learner, I guess.
Well, I remember you wrote a really cool song that was Never Told You Lies.
I'm sitting here and wondering if you will say goodbye. I know that I can say, oh, babe, I've really tried. Watching all those teardrops falling from your eyes. To leave me, oh, my darling, I never told you lies. Remember all those good times that we shared so long ago. All those precious moments, please don't let them go. I know you are listening to all those sweet talks. Believe me when I tell you they are only for a walk.
Was one of the songs that I had written when I was in high school. One of the things that I regret, we didn't do very much original material. There wasn't any of us that were, by any stretch of the imagination, prolific songwriters. For the most part, I think we were a really good cover band. The original Peyote, we split up, but then me, Carol, and Rad, the drummer, stayed together, and we brought in Hurt on bass. We did the original I Never Told You Lies was 1976, I believe. We did it at Caldwell Recording Studio. And then we did another recording of it later with the second Peyote, and that was with me and Paul and Jay, and then their younger brother, David, joined us, David Taniyuki, with Ken Collier on drums, a guy named Bubba Robert Boyd on guitar. Cal Freeman is the one that recorded that song with us. I think he pitched it to some people, and there was a little bit of interest there. It just didn't pan out for us.
We'll be right back to continue our conversation with Junior Voskis on More Than a Song on 89.1. Welcome back to More Than a Song. We're speaking with Lubbock legend, singer-songwriter, Junior Voskis. Junior, after the Peyote years, you had a number of bands you worked with around the area, including one of my favorites, Junior's Farm, and then a group called Burning Heart.
Backing up a little bit, Peyote went to three phases. In the third phase, Mickey joined me and Jay and a guy named Tony Adams and John Files and Ken Collier were still the drummer. That band disbanded, had made some really good friends with a guy named Gary Hurt, who played with me and Carol early on. Through him, I made a great guitar player named Mike Carraway and drummer named Bill Winter. So Bill Winter, Mike Carraway, Gary Hurt, Mickey, and myself, we started the band called Junior's Farm. At that point, Chelsea Street Pub was really rocking. Kenny Bernstein had expanded from Lubbock to San Antonio to Austin and Houston and to Louisiana. So we were doing the Chelsea Street Pub circuit. And you would work 6 nights a week, Monday through Saturday, 10 to 1 or 10 to 2, 6 nights a week. And that band, we stayed together maybe not quite a year. That was another great experience for me, listening and being around Mike Carraway. And Gary Hurt as well. I mean, Gary Hurt was a very talented,
fabulous musician.
Yeah, bass player, keyboardist. He wrote some good songs, and we did some challenging songs in Junior's Farm. You know, we did some Little Feet. God knows Little Feet is hard to do.
Yes.
In Peyote, I played both acoustic and electric and started learning how to play lead a little bit in Peyote and got to where I was really liking it. Learned a lot from just watching Mike Carraway play. That lasted for a while, then for about a year or so, and then through some transitions, a couple other things happened. Mickey and I played some with Woody Key in a band called Rhema, which was a beginning of my Christian conversion, I guess, into being a follower of Jesus Christ. It was right around that time in 81. Put together a band, me and Mickey and Woody Key, a bass player named Ted Payton, and then the Martinez brothers playing percussion and drums. That lasted for a little while, and then Mickey and I decided we were wanting to raise a family. Both of us were converted at the same time on a Thursday evening, January the 17th in 1981. That's when we decided to be disciples of Jesus, and so our lives changed, our perspectives changed little by little. It wasn't just an overnight thing, but started playing more Christian music, started listening to some different music, musicians that we never heard of that were incredible singer-songwriters playing Christian music. There was so much music. And that's when started the contemporary Christian music, started the contemporary worship service wars in churches. Guitars, no drums. We were right smack in the middle of the beginning of that. And then we started a Christian band with a guy named Tom Walter. And he was playing with another Tom. They had a band called Peacemaker. They did all Christian original music. It wasn't corny stuff. It was very deep thought songs. We formed a band called Burning Heart, me and Mickey and Tom. Three-piece, three-part harmony, recorded an album. We stayed together for a couple of years and we did some touring doing Christian music. And at that point, Mickey and I had two children, Michaela in 83 and then Micah in 86.
You started getting more into songwriting.
That album that we did, I wrote about half of the songs in that album. And so, yeah, I started getting more into writing and I wrote several gospel Christian songs or spiritual songs. And early 90s, ran into Don Caldwell, and this one, him and a group of men and women bought out the Cactus Theater. He says, man, we're doing these shows where we're featuring music from the 50s and the 60s and 70s and so forth. And at that point, I had gotten over the overzealous, over-religious concept of, man, I can't do secular music. When Mickey and I committed our lives to Jesus and his following and his teachings, we went all in. I mean, I sold all my albums, you know, and focused on me growing spiritually. And everything that I did and breathed and so forth was trying to stay focused to learn about what it is to be a follower of Jesus. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes maybe it's a little bit overzealous per se, but it was and it is what it is. It made me who I am today. Anyway, all that said, and I said, man, sure, I'll give it a try. That led to many years of me performing at the Cactus.
Including a role in the Buddy musical.
Buddy Holly story, right. That ran for about 3 or 4 years in a row. A couple of different guys that played Buddy, but the best one obviously was Donnie Allison. I was fortunate enough to play, believe it or not, Richie Valens.
Sing La Bamba.
La Bamba. I said, there's Junior. He's a Mexican. He can sing La Bamba. Come on. Can I say that? No. It's me, right? It's coming out of my mouth. Anyway, all that said, don't misunderstand me. It was fun. I had never really experienced any kind of acting at all at that point. That part was not a real big part. I didn't have that many lines in it. It started me into some other things where I did a lot of acting there. There were several plays that I was invited to participate and be with Jane Prince Jones and Kurt Kaiser and several other people. I did 3 or 4 of those.
And you did a very famous play with Andy Wilkinson.
Towards the end of the 90s, Andy Wilkinson asked if I was interested in doing a musical drama, The Soul of the West, him and Red Steagall. If you know anything about cowboy poetry and that kind of music, him and Andy wrote a musical. And it's based around the life of Charles Goodnight. Andy Wilkinson, somehow or another, he's related to Charles Goodnight. One of the characters in the musical was Charles Goodnight's friend who traveled with him. And it was a sheep herder from New Mexico named Cola Martinez. I played the part of Cola Martinez. And we took that musical, went up to Washington, D.C. at George Washington University, Paladuro Canyon several times, went to perform at the Bass Theater in Fort Worth. On that one, I had a few more lines. I was able to sing a song in Spanish. That was another great opportunity for acting. Barry Corbin, Annie Lockhart, several other movie stars that I was able to work with. It was kind of interesting. It was a lot of fun. Good learning thing.
Well, I really like this song from your Random CD called Love, Love, Love that you wrote with your son-in-law, Shannon, who's married to your daughter, Tori.
Mm-hmm. love, love, love. I'm in love, love, love with you. Love, love, love. I can't get enough of you. You and I make perfect harmony. Two peas in a pod are you and I, my, my. Love, love, love. I'm in love, love, love with you. Love, love, love. I can't get enough of you. Ooh, ooh. Like the sun, it warms us as we grow. Still takes two, just me and
continue our conversation with Junior Voskas on More Than a Song on 89.1. Welcome back to More Than a Song. Our guest today is Junior Voskas. Among many of your musical accolades and acting accolades, you are a professional movie star. Tell us about that experience.
I don't know about that, man. That was a crazy experience, yeah. Got a random call one day from Jeremy Boring, asking me if I'd be interested in auditioning for a part for a movie that was going to be shot here in West Texas. So I said, why not? He sent the script, and we did something online, you know, and did a few lines. And it was a movie that him and a couple other guys had written together, a screenplay called The Arroyo, about a rancher in Arizona by the border. And he was having to deal with all these illegals coming across and bringing drugs and so forth and so on. So I tried out for the part of the sheriff. Kenny Maynes tried out for the part of the rancher. And we both got the parts. It was a totally different experience than acting on stage versus acting on camera. On camera, man, there's a camera right there next to you. And I mean, it can literally see the nose hairs. And I remember telling somebody, and I said, man, I probably had this stupid nose hair or something sticking out of my nose. And I was just joking when I first mentioned it. But sure enough, when I went to see the movie, I thought, wait a second. There is a nose hair sticking out of my nose because the screen is big, right? So the nose hair is just maybe a quarter of an inch sticking out of my nose. But and on the big screen, that thing was 3 feet long. So anyway. We shot it in the summer, and it was released like the following January of whatever year that was. I don't remember. We went to L.A. and Hollywood, and we did a red carpet screening there and the whole thing. And all of us got to go up there and participate in that. I never would have dreamt of anything of that nature. But
folks around West Texas know you from your many, many gigs, the hardest working man in show business, a singer, songwriter, and actor. A lot of people don't realize how many local commercial jingles that you've written over the years.
I started in the early 2000s, and the longest is playing right now is Carpet Tech. New home is in a rag called Carpet Tech. Yeah. You know, and I did Lujan's, Sparkman's Nursery, Wainbow's Liquor Store. Those are all the old ones, you know, and Comfort Masters, Roof Masters.
The infamous Rager Dykes.
Rager Dykes, exactly. I did that one too. If I had a nickel for every time one of those played, I'd be a millionaire. But it was a neat thing that how I got into it. It was working at a radio station. I thought, man, I can do that. I think that I counted them not that long ago, close to 100 jingles that I did in the last 20, 25 years, however long it's been.
Your family is very musical. Your children, of course, your wife.
Mickey's a great piano player and a great singer, you know, in her own right. She comes from a musical family as well. Her dad was Bob Stuffelbeam, and Bob Stuffelbeam was a great steel guitar player from this area. He moved here back in the early 50s, played with the original Mains Brothers. He played some with Tommy Hancock and Roadside Playboys. And he even built his own steel guitars. There was some musicality coming from him. And then on my side, you know, my family, my uncle, without saying, our children pretty much have music in them, whether they liked it or not. It's just in their blood. And our oldest daughter, Michaela, she's the one that got the real job. She is a great singer in her own right as well. She never really pursued music per se, but she's got a great, great voice. Mike, our son, he's a great bass player. Started playing bass when he was 13, and people asked for him to go and play with different people. He played with a guy named Bart Crow, Texas country guy, for several years, and playing some with the Hog Mollies, which is some of the Maine's kids. So there's another generation. Vasquez, Stuffelbeam, Maine's, our kids are playing together now. So there's this generational thing that's happening here in Lubbock. It's an amazing thing. Because to me, people ask, why does music keep building in Lubbock? Because it's generation after generation after generation. Yeah, people come in from out of town, and some people are young, and they're growing up, and maybe they're first generation, but the generational things, the families that I'm talking about are long. They span 60, 70, 80 years. And then our youngest daughter, Tori, is a great vocalist as well in her own right, a great songwriter, and play great guitar, plays some violin, she can play piano, and multi-talented. She got to travel with a band named Blue October. She got to go to playing in Europe and all over the States. She got to play at Fillmore East. And I went to go see her at Fillmore East. You know, I went backstage, and there's all the signatures of Hendrix and Janis Joplin and everybody that's anybody that's played at the Fillmore East. And here's my youngest daughter at Fillmore East. That's kind of cool.
And you're still writing songs? You have a new one for us, I think.
Yeah, I do have a new one that I wrote a couple of months ago. Mickey had gone to go visit a really good friend of hers in West Virginia. It's a long drive, and she was going to stay there for a few days, but she was kind of getting ready to come home. So I said, well, let me just come get you, and don't fly home or drive home. I'll come get you. I took off in my car, and this song is kind of me going up there to go pick her up and bringing her home. It's called I'll Be There on Time.
Driving all night long just to be where I belong. Storms can't hold me back. I'm driving through, me and my Cadillac. Road's been hard, but it's been friendly. Gotta stay between the lines. Miles and miles between us, but I'll be there on time. I'll be there on time, time. Sunday, Sunday morning, first thing I hear is a piano song. Reminds me of you when you play for me and I sing along. Road's been hard, but it's been friendly. Gotta stay between the lines. Miles and miles between us, but I'll be there on time. I'll be there on time. 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 Please wait for me. I'll be there soon. Just you see. And Laurel, Mississippi is on the way. Why don't we stay? Road's been hard, but it's been friendly. Gotta stay between the lines. Miles and miles between us, but I'll be there on time. I'll be there on time. Driving all night long just to be where I belong.
Calistro Vasquez Jr., thank you for coming in the studio today and being part of our show.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to More Than a Song. I'm your host, Cary Banks. This show was produced by Chuck Luck. Our guest today was Lubbock legend, singer-songwriter, Junior Vasquez. Join us next Friday morning for More Than a Song at 10:30 on 89.1. For more information on More Than a Song, and if you would like to hear previous episodes, visit ttupublicmedia.org.